Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. I have done, as many of you know, over the years, hundreds, if not maybe thousands of interviews, and among the very, very best, most intriguing, and most compelling was an interview I did in 2018 with Michael McDermott. I listened to it a couple days ago just to remind myself about what an interesting guy Michael is. Michael, it's you remember that interview at all?
I do. I got goosebumps. I thought you were literally, I literally thought you were introducing someone else. am I not on now?
Yeah, I could. If you're tired and want to go to sleep, I could replay that interview. It was pretty amazing. But I realized too, in talking to you, that there were so many questions I did not even ask you, and we're going to go over some of that. I have certainly kept tabs on Michael's career ever since, and the latest CD, you'll hear a couple cuts from it, is called St. Paul's Boulevard, which is typically, I don't want to say, Michael, it's confessional, but in a way it is it not?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And this morning I thought about you because I knew I was going to talk to you. And first of all, I've missed you, man. And
I know. Don't you miss everybody? I mean, the last 2 years have been pretty rough.
They have. But I was thinking about you because you did that. I don't know if it was a series. I think you did at least a couple of articles about the Gold Star Sardine Bar, right?
Yep.
Didn't you?
Yeah. Sure.
And so my wife worked there, and we were talking about you. She wants to talk to you about this because she's got a lot of stories to tell about it. But so this record is kind of a, and I was thinking about you and then the record, and I thought it kind of makes sense. St. Paul's Boulevard, really, it's a fictional place, and it is about the kind of communities that are built within the community.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a fictional place, but I'm guessing that the Gold Star Sardine Bar had a community within the community. I know that Wicker Park in the 90s and 2000s had a community within the community. And a lot of those relationships, albeit they are transactional, it is still like a little family unit. And sometimes, and for me personally, this record is about how I had trouble. They're like a carton of milk. They all have an expiration, and no one wants to believe that because you believe that this can go on forever, and it never does. And it's hard to make that transition into another stage of your life. And that was, I got stuck there for a really long time, and that's when my life really went sideways on me. And that's kind of what the record, for whatever reason, during the pandemic, I just kind of started reflecting about all those days of yore. And, you know, kind of revisionist history and the way the things our brains do to those times. But anyway, I was thinking about the Gold Star Sardine Bar, and I'm sure.
Think too, Michael McDermott, when you can even go back even further than that. I mean, think of the kind of life that existed, of which you touched a bit, not as profoundly as someone like Fred Holstein or John Prine or Steve Goodman did. But the Earl of Oldtown was like that.
Absolutely. Or the Billy Goat, or even before that, I'm sure. And what was the place that, there was another famous Chicago place that I think Bette Midler sang at, like some of the great jazz greats came, and I saw it.
Mr. Kelly's.
Yes.
Kelly's.
All those places. And it doesn't even have to be as famous or as sexy as that. Your local pub in Elmhurst, there's a community within a community. And nowadays, we have so many interactions, as you do scroll on Twitter or whatever. You have all these interactions with people, but there's very few connections. And I think, and especially during the pandemic, there was even less. So anyway, that's kind of what the record
is. What it is, what you're talking about is we used to have I hope it comes back one of these days, a kind of face-to-face rather than screen-to-screen relationships.
Right.
When did your wife work at the Gold Star?
I think when she just moved here from Madison, and the Bill, whoever the owner was.
Bill Allen. Right? Bill Allen,
Oh my God, the stories, and she, you know, she speaks about it, like, but it was a crazy time, and so I'm guessing early 90s, I guess she's not here now.
I obviously met your wonderful wife, Heather, who is also, Heather Lynn Horton, who is also a very talented musician, who you met at, if memory serves, at the Underground Wonder Bar when it was on Walton, yes?
I did. That's where I met her. Another bar love story.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of bar love stories. None, or very few that have worked out as well as yours has.
I totally agree.
Now, Michael, one of the other things is you have been, you're a child of Orland Park who sort of got, I think, kind of, you got plucked from relative obscurity when you were relatively young and 19 at your first album. And that not only was very seductive, it was also pretty damaging, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Because, you know, when you get, first of all, in the span of probably 16 months, you get told you're the best thing ever to then being totally ignored. And it was heady stuff, and it was hard for me to process that. And I don't know how any of these, like, super young stars, people that are famous at 14 or 15, 16, I worry about them, literally. And I don't know, because it's just so hard to process that kind of rejection and that kind of acceptance.
Yeah. Well, and that kind of, you know, false ego inflation. I mean, nobody, you know, maybe Bob Dylan was, there's a great thing that I have to share with you at some point. There is a great, one of my favorite audio pieces ever is when the 23-year-old Bob Dylan first came to Chicago. He's performing at some folk festival on the South Side. And at University of Chicago, and he did what had to be among his first radio interviews with Studs Terkel on Studs' show. And it is, I think you can find it online if you just look up Bob Dylan and Studs Terkel, and it is unbelievable because he is certifiably at 22 the Bob Dylan he will ever be, the sort of weird kind of, Studs wants him to play, you go, why don't you, Bob, can you play a song from your new album? And Dylan's like, well, Studs, it'd be better if you played it on a disc, meaning a record. Right. And Studs is like, yeah, but I'd love to see you play in the studio and see you play. Well, but Studs, it'd be better on the disc. Studs finally browbeats the young Bob Dylan into singing literally five tunes live. You hear him, Michael McDermott, unpacking his guitar and playing five songs in the studio. It's quite something. But when I said that you got not only sort of seduced at that age, you fell into a terribly fast life. You're pushing now, I think it must be 10 years sober, right?
Yeah, eight.
Close.
Eight. Yep, 8.5. Yeah.
Well, what I want to do, I want people to hear your music off off the latest CD, which is St. Paul Avenue?
Boulevard.
Well, same thing to me. It could be St. Paul Street. It's St. Paul something. It's really great to talk to you again, Michael, because I re-listened to that CD. I'm going to write about you, too. I decided that it's about time that I... I'm a writer. I'm not a radio personality. I'm a writer.
You have a million-dollar voice, Rick.
Well, you
sing.
50 years... Do I sing? No, 50 years of smoking and drinking. You, too, can have this voice and have a Sunday night two-hour show.
Right.
It's the real way to fame and fortune. The other thing that I did not know about you at the time we talked... is your number one fan, to use a line from Misery, is Stephen King, who author I admire beyond words, frankly. Yeah. I know he gets, people don't admire him, and they know he's a best-selling author. I admire him as a writer. We'll talk about that. He's a huge, huge fan. And some of the stuff on your website, which is a great website, it's michael-mcdermott.com. I'm going to read some of what he had to say, because Stephen King, traditionally, ever since he wrote his first book with Carrie, has done his writing listening to rock music.
Right.
I mean, that's the way he writes. And he has some amazing things to say about you. Before we take a break, and we'll play some of your music after the half hour, how have you weathered this pandemic?
Quite well. I'm a recluse by nature, so it's, you know, it wasn't very different from me, you know, and as a writer, you know, you kind of get up, you do your isolated work, and so that wasn't very different. You know, most of my, you know, 7 a.m. to noon, 1 o'clock is all the same, and I was able to do these, and talking about community again, I was able to do these online shows, which was, a life preserver.
Sure.
Removed at sea. And but what I did instead of kind of getting on there and doing my thing and having people tune in from everywhere, I opened up the floor, so to speak, and I said, hey, send me whatever, like if there's a poem you love or a quote from a movie or a passage of a book, send in your own video. So I would turn the show over to the fans, and it really they kind of developed this other, like, they call it the pauper community, and it was really an amazing thing, and it was organic, and it was just kind of took on a life of its own, where basically I'm just kind of a part of a bigger community now, and but it was fine.
What a wonderful idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about the family? I mean, you have a daughter who's now, God, how old is Rain now?
She is 11,
oh,
going to be 12
God.
Next month.
Wow.
And, so yeah, that was hard on, you know, hard to see a kid and become very isolated and, you know, and schooling at online and you know, it was difficult for her more so than me, for sure.
You know, I agree with you. I think these 2 years away are going to be, I don't think they're going to be damaging, but they're certainly going to have a serious effect on, you
Absolutely.
Know, my daughter's 17 now, and imagine, you know, spending your junior year of high school locked up at home.
That'd be worse. Yeah.
You know, at a year where you were exploring your social life and exploring interaction with boys and girls, and going to concerts and doing all that kind of thing. Where are you? Can I ask where you're living now, Michael McDermott?
I live in the house I grew up in Orland Park.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. How's that for a mind meld?
Wow. That's really, man, that's actually, it scares me. If I were in that apartment where I grew up, I'd have nightmares every single, I'd wake up screaming, Michael. I would wake up screaming. I would hear the ice tinkling and cocktail glasses in the living room, and I'd just start choking.
There'd be
on
nobody there.
I'd start is choking on the smoke that everybody
uses. That's
a
very Stephen King thing.
That's right. My God, maybe I should write a novel. I'll just turn on St. Paul Boulevard.
You'd be stunned how many friends that would say, hey, listen, you know, can you call me? I need to talk to you, whatever. And I'll call them. Say, listen, I got this idea. Yeah. I'd love you to get to Stephen King. And I just go, hard no.
No. I certainly said no. I really admire him, and that was a real revelation. And I'll read some of what Stephen King has written about you and your music. The latest album is St. Paul's Boulevard. Michael will be playing in Elmhurst on Friday. This Friday, right?
Yeah, Friday. Yeah.
This Friday. And then at the American Music Festival in Berwyn on July 2nd. And he is a very active, he really was one of the most active touring acts that I've ever known. I mean, you've played, and I want to talk to you about that too, Michael McDermott. You played every conceivable kind of venue that there is. And I want to figure out or ask you, what kind of venue do you prefer? I mean, at one point I would think, you know, even Steve Goodman would say he preferred the Earl to a big auditorium.
Yes.
And I don't know what your answer is going to be. We're going to get some news now. Thank you so much for coming on. And we're going to talk all the way to 7, and you were going to hear Michael's music as well. Michael-McDermott.com is the website. It's a wonderful, wonderful, beautiful website. You'll hear from me, Michael, and Stephen King when we come back. Welcome back. As I said at the beginning of this interview, it is talking to Michael McDermott is among the best conversations I've had in my thousands of conversations on the radio. And you're living up to your advanced billing, Michael. He's a child of Orland Park. He's a graduate of Carl Sandburg High School. He is a veteran of one day at Loyola University, and he is a great, great songwriter and great performer, and I'm not the only one who thinks so. This is what Stephen King, I use the word great a lot in this segment with Michael and about Stephen King. He's a great, great writer. He writes, Gethsemane was Michael's second album, and it was given to Mr. King by his kids, Joe and Owen. And he writes, and it's on the website, and he's written this before, it says, "My first listen to Gethsemane is one of the great events of my life as a rock music fan. Not since I first heard Bruce Springsteen singing Rosalita had I heard someone who excited me so much as a listener, who turned my dial so high, who just made me feel so effing happy to have ears. I use lyrics from one of Michael's songs in my novel Insomnia." He also writes, it's much longer than this, I'm not going to give it all to you. He says, writes, "I'm always startled by the inability of words to express how good really rock, really good rock and roll music can be, but I always know it when I hear it, and besides, words are all I have. So let me say it simply, Michael McDermott is a great artist, and this is a great album." Michael, how did you first read that from Mr. King?
Yeah. It just gave me goosebumps. This is the second goosebump moment of our time talking together. But I was playing a show in upstate New York, and sometimes people leave stuff for you. Your
sure.
tour manager would say, hey, somebody gave you a book of Irish poetry or whatever. And so it was this kind of a book, and I saw it was a Stephen King book, but it didn't have a cover on it. It had kind of a mock cover, and I was like, what is this? And I opened it up, and it was handwritten saying, "Hey, Michael, I'm a big fan, blah, blah, blah." And I used some of your lyrics, and I was like, "What?" So he gave me the page number, and I looked at it, and I thought, "What in the world's going on?" And I didn't think. I said, "Who gave this to you?" And no one knew, and I was like, "Weird." So a couple weeks later, I'm in Orland Park, and I'm playing basketball, and I take my basketball very seriously. And so my sister opens the window, and they call me Dermot. So she said, "Dermot, you got a phone call?" And I said, "I'm playing
right ball." Yeah.
I'm playing. And she said, "It's Stephen King." And I was like, "Wait, the writer?" And so I went in, and everybody on the court stopped, and we all looked at each other. I was like, "Oh." So I went in, and he was like, "Hey, Michael, Steve King, listen, big fan. I'm like, are you sure you're not looking for Michael McDonald? Because I don't know. How'd you get my sister's number?" So he said, "I'm coming to Chicago. You want to go to a Cubs game?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he said, "I sent a book to you. I don't know if you got it." And so anyway, so he's coming to town that weekend. So I had like 3 days to read a 900-page book.
Yeah, right.
So I immediately got to work and, powered through it. And, I never met this guy. And so we met kind of outside Wrigley, and we would go in and sat down. And then it was all prepared, and I had my kind of mental organized notes about what to talk about in the book. And I said, "Listen, man, I got to tell you, I love this book." And he was like, "Ah, F that. Like, so listen, what are you listening to these days?" We didn't speak about the book.
Right.
Once, but he's amazing, as you know. And
yes.
Yeah, I think he gets a bad rap, because
I do too. Yeah, because he sells a lot of books, which is ridiculous. You fell in love with music basically because of Keith Richard, who you saw the Rolling Stones when you were in eighth grade. I want to play, Michael, if it's okay, I want to play Sick of This Town from the new latest album, St. Paul's Boulevard. You can hear this song, then we'll take a little break, and I'll come back, and you can hear another Michael song, and I will talk more to Michael. So here is, and it's a great song. See, you tell me, ladies and gentlemen, if Stephen King is right. Thanks, Krista. I have a few more minutes, sadly, just a few more minutes, but I'm going to come out to Orland Park one of these days soon, Michael, and sit down and meet you face to face. Yeah,
exactly. A face to face. We need a face to face.
And
real.
I used to be a basketball player of some note too, but I'm old.
Oh, did
you? I'm old now. I will just critique I'll critique your game, Michael. What is this? Is how many albums for you? This is St. Paul's Boulevard. Is what?
Not even sure. Somebody said 15, so I'll just believe them. Yeah.
Wow. And one of the things about Michael, his story is that, he was really kind of burned out and in danger of fading away for good when he was only 23 years old. Do you ever think back to your, I'm going to call them your non-sober years?
Yes.
And what do you think?
I think about it all the time. Yeah. I think it's unfortunately, like, and it's not like I'm hanging on to it.
Right.
But it's just, it's one day at a time. And, it's still never far from my thoughts, you know, like, and it creeps up on you. And in those quiet moments, you know, they say it's like, they call the acronym HALT, like when you're hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And that's when we default into our kind of, not necessarily addictive tendencies, but our you know, kind of those base thoughts, you know, and
right.
that's when things can go sideways on us.
Yeah. Right. Heather and your wife, Heather Horton, and your daughter, Rain, Heather's a musician, too. She didn't just, like, you know, hang around the Gold Star Sardine, but I don't know if she played there, but she's a talented musician also.
She's amazing. I think Bill let her sing. It was like maybe the first place she sang, like at the end of the night. I think they let her do like Route 66 or something like
well,
that.
Well, Bill, and if she her... if she remembers Bill, I remember Bill. He was something, and that place was wonderfully weird. Wonderfully weird.
So if we have lunch, I'll have her come in like the second half so I could have you to myself for a while, and then I'd love her
to come. No, and you guys... We will absolutely do that, Michael. Tell me about, I promised you and I, talk to me about venues. I mean, do you have, you're playing Elmhurst Hall on Friday, and
right.
on July 2nd at the American Music Festival in Berwyn, and you've played every conceivable kind of venue across the world. What's your favorite?
And it's not a cop-out answer. It's really wherever the people are having the most fun is, you know, really, they dictate the night. Even if I don't think I'm great, but if I feel their energy, then it's all great. Then I was like, I'll only say, I wish I would have performed better. But it's really, if they seem like they're not having such a great time, then it's on me.
No,
and then I hate the place.
That totally makes sense. I want people to hear another one of your songs. So I'm going to let you go, but I will be in touch, and I will be seeing you and meeting your wife
please do, Rick, and I know time is a commodity, man, and I appreciate
it's a time,
you
know, look who's talking, man. My life's not that crazy. Michael, it's great to talk to you again. It really is, and it's great to listen to you again too. And ladies and gentlemen, here is your chance to listen to him once again. It's another cut off St. Paul's Boulevard. This one is titled Paris.